The Daily Connect Podcast, the voice of the RNIB Connect community.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Connect Podcast with me, Stephen Scott, for Tuesday the 7th of August 2018. Thank you so much for downloading. Today on the podcast, we talk about shared spaces as part of our week of stories around the schemes which were called to a halt recently by the UK government. We're going to be finding out about a new video that is coming out tomorrow, that's Wednesday, from RNIB, focusing on this hot topic. And we'll meet Sandy Taylor from Glasgow, who tells us that the campaign against shared spaces rages on in Scotland. There's also a chance to have one of the most common questions we ever get on our Tech Talk show answered today: how to record audio using your iPhone. We'll record that, or in fact answer that question today, and you can record it as well, thanks to our Tech Talker Sean Preece. And we get the chance to praise another Society of the Week. This week it's the charity The Macula Society under the spotlight. It helps people with macular degeneration across the UK. That's all coming up.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
But first, we start with our big conversation this week on shared spaces. As many of you know, the scheme has been halted by the UK government following the decision by Transport Minister Nusrat Ghani, who told the BBC the schemes just don't work for blind and partially sighted people. Now, while many are celebrating this news, others see the fight to stop shared spaces as far from over. Sandy Taylor campaigns for the charity National Federation of the Blind in their Scotland office and joined me on the podcast today.
Thank you, Stephen.
Good to have you here. Yeah, it is good to be here because we want to talk about shared spaces this week. It is a really important topic that was in the headlines last week because of the announcement that the UK government had made the decision to halt any further shared space schemes. This, of course, I imagine from you, would be very welcomed.
Absolutely. However, we really would like the Scottish government to come out with a similar response.
So let's talk about that. So where are we at the moment? So the UK government, and you know a lot about this, so the UK government has halted shared space schemes. The Scottish government silent on this, as far as you're concerned.
They are at the moment. Following my petition back in December 2015, where I called for a moratorium, as a result of that, we had a seminar back in April of last year. And we've followed that on. I am part of a working group who are looking at rewriting the guidelines that the Scottish government give to local councils. And that is going out to tender at the moment, looking for further research into shared space. Now, the UK government, I believe, are now embarking on a similar route, but they have taken the decision to have a moratorium, whereas we're still waiting in Scotland doing that.
Now, I know you've been involved in this campaign against shared spaces for a long time. In fact, the last time we were together, we were in a town outside of Glasgow called Kirkintilloch, which had its own shared space scheme installed. And you and I went for a walk to experience what it was like. Let's hear what that experience was like.
Here we are, just crossing Catherine Street, which is part of a four-arm junction, very busy junction in Kirkintilloch. And we're about to cross the road at an uncontrolled courtesy crossing. Here I feel the tactile marking under my feet. I'm very privileged today to have Mark here with me as my guide, otherwise I wouldn't be able to use this crossing at all. So we're now crossing the road, I believe, Mark?
Yep, and the car has courteously stopped for us.
And wonderful. For a change, we've got a courteous motorist who stopped for us. And that's us, I would imagine, at the other side, are we?
That's right.
I really don't have any idea where I am without Mark to guide me. Previously, we used to have safety railings here, and the railings funneled us to a safe crossing point at the traffic lights and pedestrian crossings. So I know, I would imagine, I'm outside Gemini Card Shop.
Yes, we are. We're looking towards crossing Cowgate from east to west, which is going to take us into Kerr Street.
So that was about 2 years ago we got together and experienced that. What happened in Kirkintilloch since then? Because there was a big campaign against the shared space scheme, Sandy. What happened?
Earlier this year, the community council, on behalf of the local council, started a consultation. It was in two parts. One part was to do with the town, but They left out the shared space element. They didn't really want to talk about that. They wanted to talk about the historical heritage, local parks, etc. There was a separate consultation on the four-way junction that we spoke about at our last meeting. As part of that consultation at the junction, 85% of respondents wanted the traffic lights with the control crossings to be reinstated.
And this was a general survey. This wasn't for blind people. This was for everybody to contribute.
That's correct. It was right. For everyone. So the council response to that was that they will have a further 18 months monitoring the system at the junction, and then we would probably have about 2 years planning before the traffic lights are reinstated. Now, to most of us, this is unacceptable. The town is dying because people are avoiding coming to the town because they feel unsafe.
So we're at a stage where 2 years on from the time you and I tried out the shared space, and in that recording you were trying it out with Mark there, and you know, you just had no idea where you were. You were just walking across a road. You weren't even sure if you were on the road at the point when we were talking. That hasn't changed by this point. 2 years on.
2 years on. No, we are, I believe, getting a new control crossing halfway along the main street. Work on that hasn't started yet, but that will make some difference. But at the very north end of the town, my members of our local visually impaired group can no longer go to the local library. There is sheltered housing behind the library as well, and local residents there cannot independently cross the street.
So people just aren't going out, they're not going to visit the town?
They are not visiting, even drivers avoid the town because of the uncertainty of who has right of way when in fact no one has. There are daily altercations. It is a shambles. And that was the description by Willie Rennie, the Lib Dem leader in Scotland, on a radio programme.
It's interesting to talk about this from a sort of wider point of view, thinking about the entire UK here, because of course, yes, the government has halted any future and any currently in progress shared space schemes that are either being put down or have been not put down. But the question is, what happens next for those schemes that are already in place, like you're experiencing in where you are in Kirkintilloch? The experience is that yes, there is a bit of a rollback going on, but it's taking a long time. What do you do about that? I mean, so the campaign's not over then, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. No. You know, the Women in Equality Committee, who provided a report back in April of last year, they said that we must have control crossings. We must have proper curbs to navigate with. And that is the first thing that we need to do. We need to reinstate our curbs. We need to get control crossings back in place to open our towns again and let our local community back into the town again.
Right, stick around, Sandy, because we're going to talk more about another angle to all of this that you want to bring up. You know, shared space schemes is one thing, but also another new feature of our streets, which doesn't come under the category of shared spaces, is cycling and pedestrians on the same part of the pavement, which seems to be a new thing these days because the councils are trying to encourage more people to cycle and they're trying to use existing road spaces to encourage those to cycle, but that means, of course, pedestrians and cyclists are kind of in the same place, so that creates a new problem. We'll talk about that in a minute. Stay with us, Sam.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now let's turn to our Society of the Week this week. It supports those with macular degeneration, their families and carers, offers counselling and other services with many local groups around the country. Let's hear Ken Eggleston's review of the Macular Society.
Hi, my name's Ken Eggleston. I'm a retired dairy farmer from the lovely Vale of Bever in Leicestershire, where we make Stilton cheese and other stuff like that. I've been aware that I had a problem with my eyesight since the 90s, but it was only when I went to get an HGV licence in the year 2000. I got picked up on some vision field flaws, and the DVLA in their wisdom took my licence away. For the next 10 years or so, we were sort of fighting to keep my licence, and I was getting help from all over the place and doing all kinds of legitimate things to maintain my licence, which we did. But in 2012, I decided not to renew my licence as it was getting increasingly difficult. So at that point, I became registered as partially sighted. I was registered with our local service provider in Leicestershire, Avista, and I went on some of their workshops and things and got great benefit from it. And as a result of that, somewhere along the line, became aware of the Macular Society. And it was something that tipped my interest particularly was when they sort of were offering a free trial. It said, well, you know, we'd like to expand the membership. We're a go-ahead organisation. Join us for free for 6 months. If you like it, we'll convert that into a full membership. If not, thanks and, you know, goodbye. So I joined on this free membership deal, and when the pack arrived through from them, I was very impressed with the quality of the information. Not only the content that was in there, which was impressive in itself, but also the fact that I could actually read it properly. For me, it was a joy to be able to read a magazine and information, not just in large print, you know, large black and white print, but this was stylish and I was very comfortable reading it. So I got the magazine and was reading my first issue and going through it quite well, and got to about page 15, and it told me about a competition where if you entered, there were two conditions of entry, one of which was that you had to be a member of the Macular Society, which I was, and the other one was that you couldn't enter with a driving license, which I didn't have, having given up 4 years earlier, and it said opportunity to drive a supercar. So I entered that, and on we went. I also noted in the magazine that there was roadshows going around the country in various places. The nearest one to me would be Birmingham, and I can get there easily off on the train, but that one was full. But there was another one at Hull, and from here I could actually get to Hull quite easily without changing trains or anything. So I went up there and went to this roadshow and thoroughly enjoyed the information and the talks that were on there, and I was really impressed with the quality of what we've been told. I subsequently joined an initiative they've got, which is to create sort of a database of partially sighted people in different categories that might be able to help in research projects, because, you know, I've sort of take advantage of things like bus pass and disability rail card and things like that, and help from family and friends. But, you know, I want to be able to contribute and put something back in. So if there's any way that I can do that by sort of helping in trials, we're all here to help ourselves along and help everybody else as well. So I joined that, and I've done a couple of simple trials with them. They sort of give you address to approved organisations, universities or medical research or whatever. So I've done a couple of those, and I've got to say I've been thoroughly impressed with all the contact I've had with them. Find them a really go-getting outfit. You know, they're focused, they're moving forward, they're doing a good job, and, you know, I'm very pleased to be a part of it. My advice is to people, get in touch and let them see what they can do for you. Look, if there's any roadshows and things coming around your area, go there and have a chat. I don't think you'll be disappointed. The Supercar Day was a great thing. I've sort of driven all my life, and I can drive anything, and always taken a joy and a pleasure in doing it. While the DVLA were trying to ban me, I actually went and got my advanced driving license at the same time, just to prove that I was still capable of doing it. When this opportunity came up to enter the Supercar Day, having not driven for 4 years, I thought, right, I'm going to have a go. And there were various cars that you were able to nominate, and one of the ones that caught my eye was a 1967 Ford Mustang. In my time, I've had several Ford Capris and loved them. And, of course, the Ford Mustang is the granddaddy of the Capris, so I thought this has to be for me. Anyway, I was lucky enough to be awarded a chance to drive this, so a very good friend took me down to Upper Hayford in near Oxford onto a massive, great big runway where these beautiful cars were lined up, and the Mustang was there, bright red. It looked like the paint was half an inch thick. It looked gorgeous. It sounded terrific, and I thought, great, I'm going to get the chance to go up and down the runway. So that's what we did. Had about a half an hour behind the wheel. Somebody sat in the car alongside with the ability to take over should anything go amiss, which it wasn't going to. And it was a question of have some fun up and down a runway with no other vehicles around. And I said at the time, if that's the last chance I get to drive, then so be it. You know, it's a nice rounding off. So, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was wonderful to have this sort of experience and be able to do something that I thought I'd never be able to do again.
Wasn't that amazing? Ken Eggleston there talking about the Macular Society and what the charity did for him. If you want to nominate a Society of the Week, more than welcome to. You can email radio@rnib.org.uk.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
This is the Daily Connect with me, Stephen Scott, with Sandy Taylor today in the studio. We're talking about shared spaces and the whole experience of blind and partially sighted people getting out and using the towns and villages and cities and all these places which we want to get out in, but unfortunately our environments are changing around us because there are some people who think that levelling the playing field between car and person is a good idea, Sandy. That does seem ridiculous when you think about it, and interestingly, the general public are behind this.
Oh, the general public are very much against shared space, and my experience, certainly in Kirkintilloch, where I live, they are avoiding the town. Motorists are avoiding the town. It is just an unsafe environment.
Let's talk about a new style of scheme that's coming out. I don't know if there's a name for it yet. Maybe you'll know, but you know, I've heard a lot about this. These schemes where cyclists and pedestrians are sharing the same space. So essentially, the pavement is kind of split into this bit's for cyclists and this bit is for pedestrians. How does that work for you as a blind person?
It doesn't. Simple as that, Stephen. It just doesn't work. And even cyclists, they want their own space. They want separation between themselves and motorists, and they want separation between themselves and pedestrians. I mean, there are schemes planned, like in Clydebank, where there will be no segregation between cyclists and pedestrians, and that is just unacceptable.
So what is that actually? I mean, you've been along to these to see the, what will become these schemes. You've mentioned Clydebank just outside of Glasgow. Talk to me about what this actually will look like in practice from what you understand.
One of the most alarming situations is what they call bus stop bypasses, where you have a cycle lane at the side of the road next to the pavement, but when you come to a bus shelter, if there is a bus stopped at the stop, for instance, the cycle lane goes round the back of the bus shelter. Now, can you imagine elderly and frail people, visually impaired people, stepping off a bus or trying to step onto a bus and have to cross a cycle lane to do so? Now, in my experience, cyclists do not want to lose momentum. They don't want to slow down, and they will zigzag around people, and that is extremely alarming for pedestrians, particularly visually impaired and disabled pedestrians.
What's the alternative, though, Sandy? I mean, what else can we do here? I mean, it would be, I guess it would be not appropriate to ask cyclists to go into the middle of the road between the bus and the car in that situation, so you wouldn't want them going down the middle between, so say there's two lanes on the road and you've got your pavement, this is what I'm imagining, so you've got a pavement, you've got a lane and you've got a second lane, and then your cyclist has to go somewhere in amongst all that, can't go on the inside because the bus has to stop. How do you work that?
I mean, I personally would suggest that cyclists wait behind the bus until it moves off.
So it's actually stop behind the bus and wait and then carry on.
Yes, indeed.
Right.
Indeed.
Because, I mean, it's interesting, there are lots of players in this, especially in the scheme that you've mentioned in Clydebank, and there are also schemes planned in Glasgow as well, and some of the streets there, that would mean that more people can use the towns. This is essentially what this is all about, is trying to bring the towns back to life, but you feel the opposite way.
Well, some of the cycle lanes, etc., are making it a no-go area for many, many pedestrians. Sauchie Hall Street being one, there's got to be proper delineation between a cycleway and a pavement. There has got to be a safe way of crossing streets, and that means a controlled crossing from pavement to pavement, including the cycle lane. Cyclists have got to stop at a controlled crossing.
So this is something you're campaigning on. Do we have a name for this yet? I mean, we know shared spaces, but what would this be? Because it's kind of similar, isn't it?
It is. I mean, very often they are raising pavements of side streets, etc., to the same level as the pavement, and that is a shared space.
Mm.
Because
that definition is important, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because there are councils, and we've seen this before, that councils who will try and say, well, it's not a shared space scheme. We had this situation in Belfast. We talked about it on the show last year, if not the year before, where we talked about a scheme there which the council was absolutely adamant was not a shared space. The courts, however, felt otherwise.
Yeah, we had exactly the same situation in Kirkintilloch. They say it's not really a shared space. But we have long areas of raised table, 40 metres, where we have several courtesy crossings on that. And there is only a 20mm kerb, which is nothing more than a trip hazard.
Mm.
And it is essentially a level surface, and therefore a shared space.
I'm sure our listeners will have a lot to say on this, Sandy. Now, from your point of view, you do a lot of work with the National Federation of the Blind here. You're Scotland, essentially, are you?
I'm the spokesperson on Shared Space in Scotland, yes.
Well, tell us more about that organisation quickly, if you will.
Well, we have a branch in Scotland, but really the campaigning comes from, well, we have, you've mentioned Sarah Gayton in the past. Sarah's on last week. A very good campaigner. And together with a team, David Bates from our executive council and a number of other people. I have a colleague, Peter Monk, who assists me. He's a former planner. Understands council speak. He's a great help to me studying plans, etc. So we're very active in all shared spaces in Scotland. Recently there was one in Kinross, for instance, and the local people rose up against it, and they have now had control crossings reinstated. So it can be done. Councils should be listening to the local communities.
Well, that's what we're all about here, sharing the information and letting others act on it. You know, it's important that we act, isn't it? Because, you know, we're as a country, you know, no matter who you are, where you are, we're all good at moaning about things, but it's important that you stand up and actually be heard.
Yes, absolutely.
And let the right people hear you.
And we must stick at it, because councils are hoping that we'll shut up and go away. Mm. Well, we won't. We are determined to see this through on behalf of visually impaired and disabled and elderly people in Scotland.
Well, we won't shut you up. Your voice is always welcome here, Sandy. Thank you so much for coming in.
That's my pleasure, Stephen. Thank you.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Finally on the podcast today, a question we get a lot on our Tech Talk programme, and that is, how do I record audio on my phone? Well, my trusty co-host on Tech Talk, Sean Preece, joined me on the show to explain.
I think it's blatantly obvious to anyone listening to this now, I really don't have the voice for radio. The face for radio, yes. The voice, no. I sound like a drunken pirate farmer. Well, if you too are sick of my voice, don't worry, there is something you can do about it. Send us your audio. We really want to hear what you've got to say. And today, I'm going to put on my best radio voice and give you a quick demo of how you can do that. So, here we go, my lovers. It's gur easy, so let's not muck around. Let's record some audio. To do this, I'm going to use an iPhone and Voice Memos. Now, Voice Memos is an app that comes pre-installed on every iPhone, so there's no need to download any extras. So, let's jump onto the iPhone. Well, not literally. Now you'll find the Voice Memos app either on the home screen itself or inside the Utilities folder, depending on the version of iOS you're running. But by far the easiest way to start Voice Memos is to ask Siri. Hold down the home button. Open Voice Memos.
Voice Memos. Record. Heading.
Now we're in the Voice Memos app and it's a very nice and simple interface. I'll quickly swipe through the various elements on the screen.
Audio route. Headset. Button.
Well, this is pretty self-explanatory. Switches the output through the headphones or the speakers.
Waveform.
The waveform area is just a graphical display of your recorded audio. And next is some file information.
Duration. 0 seconds. New recording.
And next are the control buttons.
Play. Dimmed. Button. Record. Button. Done. Button.
The play button is dimmed because, well, we haven't recorded anything yet. And finally, we have a list of any previous recordings we've done.
Saved memos. No recordings.
And that's it. As I said, it is a nice simple layout, and the only things you really need to concentrate on are the play, record, and done buttons. But that's enough of that. Let's record something. I'll swipe to the record button.
Record. Button.
And just double tap to start recording. Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. We're waiting for your recording. So what are you waiting for? Hit that record button now. Oh dear, now that was cheesy. Anyway, when you want to stop recording, double tap on the
pause recording button.
And to hear what you just recorded, double tap on the play button.
Play button. Pause.
Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. We're waiting for your recording. So what are you waiting for? Hit that record button now. And it's as simple as that. If you want to add some more audio to the end of that file, just double tap the record button again. And to save the file, double tap on done.
Done. Button. Done. Alert. Text field. Is editing. New recording. Character mode. Insertion point at end.
You can now name the file. I'm going to call this one demo.
Cat D. Cat D. E. E. N. N. O. O. Return.
As soon as you hit return, you'll find your recording saved in the Saved Memos section.
Voice Memos. Demo. Duration. 7 seconds.
Double tapping on the file will give you some more options. You can play, share, edit, or delete the file. The edit option allows you to carry on recording to the file and also lets you trim or delete any audio you don't want to keep in the recording. Now, obviously, you just don't want to keep that recording on the phone. You want to send it to someone. So let's look at the share option.
Share button.
Double tapping on the share button will give you the familiar iOS share options. You can send your recording to someone using AirDrop, messages, or email, plus some other options depending on what other apps you have installed on your iPhone. For example, if you've got the Dropbox app installed, you'll be able to send the file to your Dropbox. So let's quickly take a look at the share options.
AirDrop recipient. No one found yet. Message. Button. Mail. Button. Add to notes. Button. Import with Dropbox. Button. Import with VoiceDream. Button. Add to iCloud Drive. Button.
As you can see, there's a few different ways to get that recording to someone. I tend to mainly use Dropbox or email. Double tapping on the mail option will bring up the standard iOS email screen. All you have to do is type in the email address of who you're sending it to and hit send. The recording will be sent as an email attachment. Easy. And I think that's about it. I can shut up. Okay, I know. Calm down. So to finish up, here's just some quick tips when it comes to recording. Firstly, plan out what you want to say in the recording. I'm not saying write a script, but just make some mental bullet points of what you want to say and what topics you want to cover. Also, when it comes to holding the microphone, or in this case the iPhone, try and keep a tight grip and don't move it around too much. The microphone is sensitive and it will pick up any handling noise. Also, experiment with how far away you hold the iPhone from your mouth. If you hold it too close, your voice will be distorted, whereas too far away, and people will struggle to hear you. And finally, try and keep background noise to a minimum. There's nothing more irritating than trying to listen to someone over the sound of a computer fan or a washing machine. And believe me, I know this can be difficult, but if you can find a quiet place to record, the recording will come out so much better. And that's it, I'm done. So give it a go, have some fun with it, because we really do want to hear from you.
Thanks, Sean. That is our podcast for today, Tuesday, 7th August. Back tomorrow, of course, at the usual time, just after 5 on the RNIB Connect radio feed. Join me for that if you can. Also live on air tomorrow at 10 till 12 on the Daily Connect if you want to join me and get involved in the conversation. I'll catch you tomorrow.
The Daily Connect podcast.